In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Do you remember the first creation story at the start of Genesis, with the Spirit of God moving on the waters? And do you remember your book of children's Bible stories, with a picture of Noah on his ark sending out a dove over the waters? Well, all this is what's going on in today's gospel reading. There's Jesus in the waters of baptism, with God's Spirit descending on him. So the creation is beginning again, giving the world another chance. A new creation is dawning in Jesus Christ. And this Spirit descends like a dove, like Noah's dove, looking over the waters of chaos and judgment to find a place of safety and hope, the place that Christians have found in Jesus Christ. In Jesus Christ, the covenant with Noah from our Genesis reading, a covenant blessing the whole creation with that beautiful bow in the clouds, the rainbow, blessing man and beast, giving a traumatized world something to hope for. In Jesus Christ, this is profoundly revealed. The hope in God's goodness that we celebrated in Psalm 25 today is confirmed for us in Jesus Christ. But wait, as they say, there's more. There's another Old Testament echo in today's gospel. Jesus comes up from the water to be driven by God's Spirit into the wilderness for 40 days, just as Israel came up from the Red Sea waters to begin its 40 years Exodus journey in the wilderness. Here in the wilderness, where Israel failed God again and again in those Exodus stories, Jesus, the new Israel, did not fail God. Here, in the language of our 1 Peter reading today, the righteous acts for the unrighteous. And here, friends, in a world of evil and ready capitulation to its temptations, Jesus was revealed as the sinless one. That is, as the one never at odds with God and never separated from God, as his resurrection and ascension most profoundly testify. I remember a confirmation class for young adults when I was rector of Manuka, where a bright ANU maths student queried whether Jesus really was sinless. How could he truly understand a human condition if he'd never experienced at all, especially sin? Hers was a good question. I replied that those who face temptations yet who don't give in to them are the ones who most fully understand the human condition. They're mindful enough to see through the false premises and promises of our typical temptations, and they're self-aware enough to recognize their own self-deceptions. That is, they're the most clear-eyed. So, the sinless Jesus, with the Christian saints who share in Jesus' holiness, are the most fully human ones. They're also the most truly humane ones, the most truly empathic, the most truly sympathetic, not at all piously off-putting. And hence they offer us not only solidarity in our temptations, but concrete help in getting through them and past them. That young ANU maths student is now a parish priest in Grafton Diocese, by the way, in case you were wondering how that confirmation class turned out. What we have in today's gospel then reveals the heart of Christian faith, hope, and love. It comes with believing in Jesus Christ and not just having opinions about him, with believing in his centrality, in his all-sufficiency, believing that if we can't do it, he'll help us, believing that if we can't bear it, he'll bear it with us. Indeed, if we can't hold up under the greatest burden of our beliefless times, that is, the burden of having to ground all meaning and purpose entirely within ourselves, and of course, if we try to do that, we might find spirituality or even the church perhaps giving us some resources to help in our project of self-creation. If we can't bear the burden of that, then here's a thought. Let's turn instead to Jesus, who picks us up and stands us on our feet and gives us more rather than less strength, and interestingly, more rather than less personal agency. So instead of we ourselves as the subject of our lives, with Jesus as an object to whom we might or might not look, Jesus himself becomes the subject of our lives while we become his object. Instead of Jesus providing us with some spiritual resources then, we the baptized become his spiritual resources. Because friends, the world's spiritual magnetic field has reversed itself in baptism. Jesus Christ becomes our new center, and we become our truest selves in his orbit. We find our truest freedom in his service. And in light of all this, we must not underrate the Eucharist. Now, we can't just see this as a personal quiet space, even as an opportunity for opening our hearts to God. Because primarily, here in the Eucharist, God opens his heart to us, seeking us and finding us in Jesus Christ, so that we can more truly seek and find God out there in the living of our Christian lives. Now, these claims about Jesus will have their critics, even in solid Anglican pews. Here there's too much Jesus. What's he on about? Too much that's too definite. Too much that sounds exclusive. Too much that dismisses worthy spiritual alternatives. Well, I have thought about such challenges a lot. Back in the day, I did my doctoral dissertation on the uniqueness and finality of Jesus Christ in late 20th century Christian thought, so that for years I explored the question of how faith in Jesus actually works, and especially in an era when historians raise doubts about the Gospels, while alternative religious possibilities confront us not just in foreign countries, but now down the street, in the office, in the classroom, and for some of us, around the family table for Christmas dinner. So for now, let me highlight two things about Christianity's claim to represent the fullness of truth. Not definitive things, perhaps, but I hope suggestive ones. Remember our Genesis story about Noah today. The covenant restored by God after the flood in the Noah story is not narrowly conceived. It's not just for the people of God. Rather, it's for the whole world, for all creatures. See, the firm center of our faith has soft edges. I know there are a few good cooks sitting here today, so you'll understand what I mean when I say our faith is al dente. It's got a firm center, but soft edges. Got it? Likewise, in our 1 Peter reading today, and for the only time in our whole New Testament, we hear about Easter Saturday and Jesus' descent to the dead, the legend of his preaching to the souls in prison, that is, to the disobedient who'd perished in Noah's flood. This is a story of grace, of inclusion, and of second chances. Ours is not an exclusive Jesus for superior insiders. The church's claims for Jesus need not be seen, they need not be seen as an affront to the Enlightenment tolerance that underpins so many of our Western values. Instead, if we have some tolerance and inclusion in our world today, It's largely because of the impact of Jesus Christ and the non-violent, non-vengeful, world-embracing God that Jesus Christ reveals at Easter, at Ascension, at Pentecost. Now, here we see just what type of reality it is that now spreads its arms across our whole rainbow world. It is a force of love, and it bears the face of Jesus Christ. And as I concluded in my doctoral thesis, if Jesus is unique, it is an inclusive uniqueness, not an exclusive uniqueness. So, to any skeptics present, I say this. The particularity of Jesus is a blessing, not a curse. If Jesus displaces us and our egos at the center of our lives, so that he becomes the subject of our lives and not we ourselves, then we find neither the autonomy that the Enlightenment prized above all else, nor the heteronomy that it despised. But what we do find is a genuine and authentic humanism. And all of this recalls our Lenten journey, our Lenten vocation, which is to let go of frivolous alternatives and prepare for the adventure of Easter. The Lord be with you.